Hi, I'm Scott, and welcome to the fifth episode of Gamepad in Hand. Today I'm going to be talking about, and spoiling the story of, Rogue Legacy, a rather difficult action platformer that tries to have very little negative when the player character dies. So join me as I talk about whether they succeed in that, as well as the slightly more important question of is it fun? Gamepad in Hand. My duties are to my family, but I am loyal only to myself. These are the words that Rogue Legacy starts with, and it's part of a tutorial with a unnamed knight and some nice music in the background. The very same music, in fact, that is currently playing as the bed here. In this tutorial, you learn how to, you know, jump around, move around, kill enemies, and then, just as you're moving along in the tutorial, you enter a large room, and the music stops. In this room is a fairly obvious king figure, and a single prompt. Press X to attack. You can't leave the room. You can't go back. The only thing you can do is kill the king. After attacking the king, you are brought back to what essentially amounts to the title screen again, and told to start your legacy, which is, you know, it's kind of neat because it implies some level of separation from the, at very least, attempted murder you just did during the tutorial. When you start this new legacy, you start as Sir Lee, which is named after the founders of the studio that made the game, Kenny and Teddy Lee. You also start next to this training dummy, which I'm bringing up now because otherwise I am never going to remember it. It changes its names as you attack it, and this can be things like ouch and please stop hurting me. It's kind of a cute little touch in a game that doesn't have a lot of cute or cutesy things. It's kind of, it stands out. Also, when you die, you see this, where you can go back and see all the characters that you played, but Sir Lee is not actually the first character in the line. You can see a character by the name of Johannes, who looks pretty similar to the character you played in the tutorial. However, Johannes's visor is up, whereas the tutorial character's is down. And the visor thing is actually kind of note, basically because every character has their visor up. Once you're in the game, once you're actually trying to get into the game, you can walk up to the castle. There's nothing in your way, at least on this trip. That's not the case on subsequent visits, and this is kind of a point of contention I have with the story. I'll get into really the relevance on it later, but once you've finished this initial stuff, Sharon's there to guard the gate, even if you don't have any cash. Once you're actually inside the castle, you can see that there's a diary with some journal entries from a otherwise unnamed prince just in the entryway. And there are some, you know, here is where you get the first entry. There are some later spots where you get further entries. And that's basically where the story of the game comes from. And it's kind of unfortunate given that, you know, they literally just showed that they can do show not tell by having a tutorial where there's story here, but there's no dialogue, well, aside from press X to attack. And, you know, it's really well done. It really sets the mood, and then you find out that everything's just data logs. Another potential problem is that if you don't die much, or you just otherwise just get unlucky and don't run into where the diaries are too much, And that's what happened to me the first time I played. I was terrible at this game, and yet I was so far away from unlocking what would, you know, be the final diary entry you can get out in the main game, that it's very fortunate that when you unlock the final entry by story, it unlocks all the other entries, because I think I was at like 13, even though I'd been playing for something like 10 hours. You know, from this diary, you can read that the prince writing the journal was sent on a quest to Castle Hampson to retrieve something to cure the king who had been wounded by a would-be assassin. And, you know, this implies a link to the tutorial. What I kind of figured originally is you're going to, you know, do this and you're going to finish the prince's efforts, because that kind of game is implying. You also see on the wall of the this little starting area, there's a little basic map giving you a kind of a rough set of locations instructions, with the forest on the right, the tower, which you'll probably know as Maya later, and I'll call it Maya now so that there's no confusion talking about it later. And the dungeon, which I'll just call Darkness later, down. Castle generation is fairly similar to how the floor generation in Binding of Isaac works. If you're at all familiar with that game, the rooms aren't all the same size, but they're placed randomly next to each other. Unlike Isaac, I believe this game can have gaps in the room placement. This game does have some fairly interesting set pieces. It does have quite a few rooms, and quite a few of those rooms are actually pretty fun to play, but it's a setup where you're likely to tire of it quickly, and I feel like one of the reasons for that is Isaac always kind of starts you off at the relatively same-ish level of strength. You know, getting through the first set of floors isn't necessarily difficult all the time, but it you know, you do need to get some skill in order to even be able to do that. Rogue Legacy doesn't have that. You can very, very quickly get overpowered, and unfortunately being overpowered in Rogue Legacy, it's not as much fun as being overpowered in Isaac is. One of the things that you will discover really quickly, most likely, assuming that you're, you know, not entering this game and being basically perfect at it, is you'll quickly see that when you die, you have to choose an heir. This is one of three characters that you are offered, and they can have a variety of traits, and they can be of any class that you have unlocked. Initially, this means that they can only be a knight, a knave, a barbarian, or a mage, and most of the time, early on anyway, you are going to want to be either the knight, just because they're the only one that does full damage. Or you're going to want to be the barbarian just because they have additional health. This is also where you're going to be doing any castle building. And castle building is what you need to do to unlock skills. It unlocks some stat increases. It also unlocks new classes. And it's where you unlock the ability to purchase equipment, as well as unlocking the ability to purchase runes and lock down the castle to keep it as it was, before you died. This can be really useful if you're trying to just get a boss down. You found the boss, you don't want to have to go through the hassle of finding the boss door again. And since I brought it up and will otherwise forget about it, I'm going to spend a moment here just to talk about how the, well, not how, because I don't know how, but talk about the heir generation. The classes are probably the most important thing 90% of the time. There is the exception of there are some traits that are so bad that At the very least, I will never pick a character that has it willingly. The first class, the most basic class, what Sir Lee is a knight. This is notable basically because it has base stats across the board. It has an advanced version, which is called the Paladin. And the advantages that the Paladin brings to the board are it has the ability to block, eliminating all damage that it receives for a while, as well as turn it into a kind of a statue, like Mario could in Mario 3 when he had the Tanuki suit. This has the advantage of it's not just defensive, but it's also offensive. Unfortunately, it takes quite a bit of mana to use. This also used to have the advantage of it could beat the ever-living heck out of bosses. This was changed, basically because bosses in this game are dumb and just try to run into you. Quite a few of them anyway. And I believe all of the bosses now are immune to the damage from the statue form. The next type of class that you are likely to actually use is the Barbarian. The Barbarian has 1.5 times health and 3/4 strength. It also has half mana, but I don't really consider, outside of the magic using classes or the classes that more specialize into magic use, I don't really consider having lower mana to be that big of a deal. The Barbarian has a advanced form called the Barbarian King or Queen, depending upon the gender of the character. And its special ability is it can use a shout. The shout does a little bit of damage, but it also is mainly useful for knocking away projectiles. And of course, it's a reference to Skyrim. Next class, one of the basic four you have, is a Knave. The Knave carries with it a 15% crit chance, and it does an additional 125% crit damage. This is just additive. It has 3/4 health and strength, and 65% normal mana. The advanced form is an Assassin, and it probably has the best special ability in the game. Its stealth avoids all damage. It costs mana. And the one annoying thing I dislike about it is that it has a black cloud that if you're playing it can sometimes obscure where your hitbox is, and I really dislike that. Next class, last of the basic four, is the Mage. And the Mage has 1.5 times mana, and 1.25 times int, or what basically amounts to spell damage. However, it has half as much health and sword damage as the rest of the characters. On the upside, it does have a small amount of siphon. It generates, I think it's 6 mana every time you kill something. It has an advanced form that's the Archmage. And the Archmage can cycle through 3 spells. Unfortunately, you can only see one of the spells that you have at the start. If it's a really good spell, though, you know, you can kind of figure, well, it doesn't really matter what the other 3 are. And you're kind of helped out here by the fact that, well, there aren't really that many bad spells. None of them, at least, there's not going to be 2 of them that are a deal breaker. Worst case scenario, you have Blade Wall, which is still situationally useful. I think that's the worst spell that Mage can get, because that's the only spell that I consider worse than Dagger, which Dagger's still actually good. So you're half damage compared to a Paladin. It doesn't always become that big of a deal, because you also still get mana back when you kill something with a spell. The next class... next class you're most likely to unlock anyway, is the Lich. And due to the fact that I just mentioned the Mage, I'm going to mention the magic using classes here as a bundle, even though the next one is likely to be done quite a bit later. The Lich has 1.5 times spell damage, and it has up to normal Paladin health and up to double the mana. However, it starts at 0.35 times health and half mana, and it does 3/4 strength. And if you are in the advanced form, the Lich King or Queen, Obviously a reference to World of Warcraft there. In that case, your kills increase your current as well as max health by 4 up until you reach the cap, and you can convert health into mana, half of your max health into mana, up until you reach the cap there. One nice thing about it is you can only convert your max health, so you can't directly kill yourself. However, you know, if your current health is going to be greater than what your max health was, you also lose current health. It's not bad, but it doesn't have access to some of the really good spells, and its one unique spell kinda sucks, or at least not really that great. The next class is the Spell Thief. It has 3/4 health and strength, and it has 40% mana. And, you know, I did say that this is going to be the next spellcasting class. And the reason for that is you get 30% of the damage that you do returned as mana. That is ridiculous. That is essentially infinite mana. Once you've unlocked the special version of the class, the Spell Sword, the special button allows you to double the spell damage and cost, and also increase the size of the spell that you're casting. A lot of times, unfortunately, this still isn't quite as good, just for getting through the castle anyway, as the Archmage is, but the Spell Sword is definitely a much better boss killer. Just because it can always get the mana back. Next class that you're... Well, the next class that's kind of, sorta, magic-based, or at least can be used as magic-based, because it has access to some of the better magic spells, is the Miner. And it has... the game says plus 30% to base gold pickup. This is additive. It just means plus 3 gold to each coin that you find. In return for this, it has half health and mana and 3/4 strength. The advanced version is the Spelunker or Spelunkette. It has a headlamp that used to cost mana, 1 per second. Now it's free. It just means increased visibility in darkness and that you don't have to worry about the effects of the trait Glaucoma. The real advantage, though, is that all chests and events and such are marked on the map without you having to enter the rooms, which is it's a really huge advantage. You can just go to chests. I believe it's fairy chests as well, and you can just go for them all, and it's a lot faster with a miner just because you can see where the heck you need to go. Obviously, some of the times the rooms aren't going to be set up in a way that's that makes this easy, but the next class is Shinobi. It has 1 3/4 times strength, 1.75 times strength. It also has 60% health and 40% mana. However, it cannot crit. It also has faster move speed, though. This is kind of the boss killing class, regardless of whether you unlock the advanced version or not. And I don't always actually unlock the advanced version. The Hokage's ability is to teleport in the direction you're facing. Pretty obviously a Naruto reference, just like the prior Spelunker reference is pretty obviously a reference to most likely actually Spelunker, but possibly also Spelunky. The next class that you unlock is the Dragon. It's most likely going to be the final class you unlock on the castle screen anyway. It has MP regen. It's 4 every half second, 8 per second. It's just there's a tick every half second. However, it has 40% health. It has 25% mana. It can't use the sword, and you can't jump. The only way you can attack is to use the Dragonfire spell, which costs 15 mana and just generally sucks. For the most part, that's kind of the case for the dragon as a whole. It's decent at getting around, but because of the way flight works in the game, you don't have the mobility that you necessarily are used to. And just, it's... It's so disappointing for the most part. It's the damage isn't there. The regen doesn't help that much. And unless you've actually been kind of focusing on building up for the dragon, the character's just kind of going to be disappointing. Especially because you only have 40% health. You have the least health of any class. And, you know, dragon sounds like it's going to be something that's overpowered. And most likely when you unlock it, you're going to be just avoiding it. It's going to be the, you know, spending the 5,000 gold to unlock it's going to be the worst decision you've made for a while. There is also a secret class, who I'm not going to mention at the moment because the name is a spoiler. It is the same class as the final boss. It has 70% health and mana. It's also very, very difficult to unlock, but it can use magic as basically as the final boss does. It gives you all of the same abilities as, well, the first form of the final boss. And now that I've spent 10 minutes talking about classes when I said that it was going to take a couple minutes, I'm going to mention that, you know, aside from Dragonfire, none of the spells are really a deal breaker. Fortunately, very fortunately, Dragonfire is exclusive to the dragon. And I say that fortunately because it has really poor range in comparison to the other attacks of its sort. It's basically a crappy dagger because it doesn't go through enemies. It can't hit multiple enemies the way dagger can. There's also traits, like I mentioned before. There's a few really good ones. PAD, P-A-D, peripheral artery disease. It makes it so that spike traps don't go off on you. There's also EHS, electro-hypersensitivity. It makes it so that the platforms that you have to hit to open are just always open. However, there's also a lot of really bad ones. My least favorite are probably Vertigo, which it vertically mirrors the screen and makes the game basically unplayable, in my opinion. There's Colorblind and Nostalgia. Colorblind puts a grayscale filter over the screen, and Nostalgia puts a sepia filter over the screen. Both have effectively the same, you know, they do the same thing. And that is, if you're in the Maya or the dungeon, they make it very difficult to see enemy projectiles. The only other trait that I really, really dislike is Flexible. And that, it allows you to turn mid-swing rather than backing away. But the problem is, you get used to backing away. You get used to being able to back away during swing and having, you know, still hitting the thing that you're swinging at. This makes a certain fairy chest a lot more difficult if you get it before getting a dash rune. And more importantly, it makes a lot of the bosses just a lot more difficult because you're trying to hit them while avoiding being hit, and you just can't. There's also some that don't always, you know, they're not necessarily always good or necessarily always bad. My kind of three notables there are, there's electrophobia. It sounds bad because it makes some of the chickens that drop, chicken legs that drop turn into chickens that can hurt you. But the chickens persist in the room, whereas legs don't. So, you know, if you come across chickens when you're already at full health, well, you can just leave them. You can leave the room and come back when you need them. And so for the most part, I actually kind of consider it a good trait, which sounds like it's the opposite of what it should be. There's also Clumsy, which just breaks all of the breakable things that you run into. And it sounds sort of good, but it can make a lot of rooms really difficult. Especially if you're, you know, difficult to avoid damage. Because there's some rooms where the only thing that's keeping you out of the spikes is these barrels. There's also Dwarfism, and it's great for dodging. And there's some, you know, really solid dwarf-only passages that lead to fairy chests or lead to just regular chests that you otherwise can't get to, but the tiny swing range on your sword really sucks. So if you're not you know, it's one of those things where, hey, it's actually really good for dragons because dragons don't use the sword. There's also a handful of actually, you know, really kind of a fair number of just purely cosmetic traits. Baldness, all it does is remove the feather in your feathers from your character's helmet. Dyslexia just scrambles text in game. Most of them just they're not really relevant. And that's kind of the problem I have with traits as a whole. Most of them just don't have gameplay relevance. Talking about the story for a second, and basically talking about the story so that I'm free to go into tangents later when I'm talking about bosses, the story unlocks as the player comes across journals, as I mentioned previously. Sometimes they're just really rare, and that kinda is unfortunate, and sometimes you come across what feels like four or five in a single go, and you unlock a lot of the story. It feels like it's not really well timed due to that random nature, though. One of the good things, though, is that from the journals we do learn quite a lot about the prince. He was apparently not his father's favorite child, despite being the eldest. He was also apparently more of a swordsman than his siblings, who were apparently more along the lines of scholars. One thing we learn quickly in the journals, though, is that when the prince entered the castle, Sharon took everything that the prince owned, all of his gold, as payment, leaving his wife and children nothing. Sharon states that it is fair because none have returned from the castle. And the prince, as with the player character, cannot exit the castle once he has entered. The prince grew frustrated with the door to the final area, this large golden gate. He, after being afraid of the bosses that he saw, he took on one of the bosses and, once he was victorious, saw in his mind's eye that the door had changed slightly. The icon that looked vaguely like the boss was now lit up. He also reveals that while the chicken legs are just simple chicken legs, the mana potions are just sparkling water. This could be a reference to any number of games, I think, but realistically here, it's a reference to WoW. I mean, you know, no other game really did that prior to WoW, and there's already been a reference to WoW with the Lich King. Anyway, over the course of his journey, the prince was successful in slaying all of the bosses. He then entered the Golden Door, intent on saving the king and discovering the cure that the king sought. However, rather than finding a cure, he found a fountain of youth and realized that the king's illness was merely age. He also expected to find a beast guarding the fountain. What he found was the king. He then later states that by killing the king, all he's left is a rogue legacy, which is, you know, I think it's a pretty nice title drop. He also mentions a belief that his actions are irrelevant, basically owing to the fact that Sharon emptied the royal coffers the moment the king emptied the castle. So there was no money for the kingdom, so, you know, there was going to be poverty and hell, for all intents and purposes, for the kingdom for a while. The question that I have, and the complaint that I have, is why didn't this happen to Sir Lee? Presumably, given that he has armor, given that, you know, he is looking like a knight, they made something. They had some kind of money. While he has no gold to start, that does not imply that he is completely broke. So why doesn't Sharon appear for Sir Lee? You know, it's one of those things where it's certainly relevant to the generation map. In every other case, even if you win the game, even if you kill the traitor Johannes and start a new game plus, you have to deal with Sharon before entering the castle. So Sir Lee is the only one that doesn't even deal with Sharon. Why? It's kind of just a story gap. It's a plot hole. And I don't like it when the plot hole would be super easily addressed by just, oh, yeah, Sharon's there even when Sir Lee enters the castle. As mentioned, it's Johannes, the same Johannes that is presumably Sir Lee's father. Johannes is a traitor. The secret class is named Traitor as well. And you actually get a special scene if you go into the final boss room as a traitor. It's, you know, the class is pretty good, as you'd expect it to be. And ultimately, I think that the story is pretty good for something that's entirely just data logs, but I also kind of feel like it's something most people won't read, or at least won't remember the relevant parts from before when they read the later entries. And it's just, I'm not a huge fan of how the story actually plays out. And by that, I'm not a huge fan of randomly being able to unlock more story elements. It just leaves kind of a bad taste in my mouth. So I mentioned previously that one of the reasons I wanted to get the story done was so that I could go off on tangents when it came to the bosses. And the bosses are actually kind of interesting, mostly because all of them have some kind of relevance to the Fountain of Youth in either historical or mostly historical fiction. The first boss that you are likely to come across in the castle area is Kadir, obviously named after Al-Kadir, who was a servant of God in the Quran. In this game, he's a large eyeball, and he has pretty easy patterns to beat. The character that he was based on is kind of especially interesting because he's been, you know, conflated or syncretized, to use the academic term, with quite a few other both religious and historical figures. Some of this is due to a cultural mesh that kind of occurred due basically to the Crusades. Some of it's also kind of a cultural mesh due to the integration of prior practices into Islam, as well as Islam into some of the other practices, as basically as it became integrated with some of these other societies. The thing that relates Kadir to the Fountain of Youth is actually a story from the Alexander Romances. Specifically, some of the Eastern versions state that Alexander and a servant named Andreas in some cases and named Al-Kadir in others crossed the land of darkness, known as Hamsun, as just like the castle that we were playing in. It's not all sources, but quite a few say Hamsun. And in Hamsun, in this land of darkness, there is a great Persian army that was trapped by a miracle of God. Kadir leads Alexander the Great to this Fountain of Youth, and Al-Kadir, or the servant character Andreas, is consistently stated to have drank of it. It's not as consistently stated that Alexander did. Speaking of Alexander, Alexander is portrayed in this game by a large skull, and he summons skull enemies. Both he and the enemies shoot in all four directions. Obviously, based off of Alexander the Great, and he's, like I mentioned, he's said to have searched for the Fountain of Youth in some, not all, but some of the Eastern versions of the Alexander romances. He's not always said to have found it. He's not always said to have drank from it when he did find it. And he is, of course, an interesting figure because of just how much he did and how little time he had as a ruler. He died just shy of his 33rd birthday, and he ruled Macedonia for 14 years, and after 2 years where he solidified his rule in Greece, including one incident where he raised Thebes, and that very likely, you know, possibly over-solidified his rule there, because the other city-states were just terrified of him. He spent 5 years to destroy the then roughly 200-year-old Persian Empire. He spent 7 years expanding against enemies that offered considerably more resistance than the Persians did. His death, though, is a good example of how little we know about some of these aspects of history. We know that he died from a fever that he had for roughly 10 days, but we don't know the cause of the fever. We don't know whether it was poison, we don't know if it was typhoid, we don't know if it was malaria. And that's another thing that kind of makes him an interesting figure, because most of these big rulers died in battle. Alexander the Great didn't. The next figure is Ponce de Leon, or possibly Ponce de Leon. I'm not entirely sure. I'm not even going to say I'm not fluent. I don't speak Spanish. He is a large fireball, and when he moves around, he leaves these smaller fireballs in his wake. These can trap you. They can be very, very difficult to avoid. Fortunately, if you're very careful when pathing him around, you can, you know, get out of some of these situations, but sometimes you're just kind of jumping into more fireballs and just need to be very, very careful. He was the first governor of Puerto Rico, and he also led the first known European expedition into Florida. Contemporary sources, including his own writings, don't suggest anything to do with the Fountain of Youth ever. It's known that, you know, somebody in Spain wanted him to be looking for a land that at certain times was said to have held the Fountain of Youth, but it's not known that he cared. Really, the first source to suggest anything relating him to the Fountain of Youth came 14 years after he died. Having said that, searching for the fountain is what he's famous for, oddly. Next is Herodotus. Herodotus is a large slime that splits into smaller slimes, and more importantly, also is when he splits, becomes a earth mage as well. So it's two smaller slimes and an earth mage every time he splits. And there's spike traps on the floor, which is really annoying because these slimes move on the floor really, really quickly. So it'd be really nice to just be able to sit on the floor and kind of attack them. But unless you have pad, you can't. The real Herodotus, though, was a Greek historian. One who tended to focus on things with which he had firsthand knowledge. One of the things he wrote about, though, was the Macrobians, a very long-lived people. Roughly 120 years is what I believe the average was supposed to be then, and that he, or you know, possibly the writing, attributed their longevity to bathing in the waters of a certain fountain. And basically, everybody just kind of assumed that this you know, it was the fountain because they were eating normal food, they were drinking milk, I think, is what the actual thing they drank. And it's, you know, there's no real reason for them to be so long-lived. There's, you know, there's going to be Johannes as well, but I can't find any real relevance. Maybe it was supposed to be John. There's lots of Johns related to the Fountain of Youth. Could also be that it was, you know, kind of a variation on Johann and intentionally done such that there is no historical relevance. There's these remix bosses. If you get certain obols and give them to Sharon, you can fight these remix bosses. They're extremely challenging. They're also what you need to do to unlock the traitor class. I'd actually just argue that they're not fun, basically because the bosses are such horrid damage sponges. Having said everything that I've said about this game, I will say that at the end of the day, I felt that it was fun the first time I played through it. I also liked it quite a bit this last time that I played through it. However, even with it having been a few years, I remembered some of the rooms, and I didn't like remembering some of the rooms. It made it so that I much more quickly tired of the game. When I first played through it, I played through a couple New Game Plus levels. This time, I was done after a single run through. Aside from the fact that I still needed to unlock the obols, and honestly, doing that may have made it much quicker for me to tire of the game. The game does have some very positive points. I do like that, you know, there's gradual improvements to help make sure that the player's never permanently stuck on any one point. However, they also make it feel like there's no really greater meaningful improvements aside from, you know, maybe a handful of pieces of equipment. The bosses are pretty fun, but there aren't enough of them, and there's not really enough variety in the ones that are there. There's New Game Plus, which I tend to like. You know, there's New Game Plus Plus. There's, you know, beyond that, it's infinite scaling. And the player quickly plateaus in power. And, you know, realistically, after a few run-throughs, is just better off avoiding enemies. You know, there's the trait system and how they slightly change gameplay. But most aren't meaningful. And some of the bad ones, like Vertigo especially, are just too meaningful. The music's really well done. Whale Shark, the theme that I've played a few times now, that comes from both the ending and the tutorial, is probably my favorite song on the track. The revisiting the tutorial section when you first enter the final boss door really slams the point home, especially when you read the final diary entry, and you know, it does a good job of placing you on the same path as Johannes without ever making it feel like you're forced onto that path. Having said that, I don't like that the story becomes tell, don't show, after starting out so successfully, just showing Johannes killing the king. Anyway, this has been Gamepad in Hand on Rogue Legacy. It's a, you know, I still feel that it's a fairly good game. It's very, very definitely not for everyone. And even the people that do like it aren't necessarily going to like it as other, not necessarily super similar games, but reasonably similar games like Isaac or Spelunky or, and that is what it is. If you'd like to continue listening to us, you can check us out at gamepadinhand.com. The subscribe button at the top will bring you to a page that lists the options, including iTunes, Google Play Store, and an option of just giving you the RSS feed if that's what you'd prefer. You can also subscribe to us on Twitter or Facebook for updates there. Thank you for your time.